going to present the experience with gender responsive budgeting in Mexico City. You know, Mexico City is where the capital of the country is. It's a very big city. We are 8 million people, and with the surroundings, 20 million people living in the surroundings. But I am going to talk only about the Mexico City government, that is 8 million people. That's quite a big city. And the experience with gender-responsive budgeting we had in there. We'll see first the results, and then the background, the Mexico City government issues, the facts, the achievements, and the challenges. And as a result, we had the mayor of the Mexico City presented the expenditure budget for Mexico City 2008, calling it as gender-responsive budget to the Legislative Assembly. This was the first page of the budget, and it says budget project on expenditure for Distrito Federal, that's Mexico City, gender responsive budget 2008, and that's the main logo for the Mexico City. And it's very important for me to tell you that it was in the first page that the title already was gender responsive budgeting. And it not just was the first page, but the 21st pages of the budget, it was everything explained what we meant by gender responsive budgeting. So everybody could understand and know what it means. The first result I want you to know is that each ministry in the whole Mexico City government must have at least one institutional activity or program directed at women or gender equity. Every single institutions, from the firemen to everybody else at the city government, at the city government, must have one activity. We are sure those activities are not completely gender activities, but we are sure those are women's issues that we must start for. Gender information was requested, and the process was begun to formulate an assessment for a gender perspective. In the first pages of the formats, we asked for disaggregated data. We asked for the problem that it was going to be resolved with that program, and within them, we start having some kind of gender or engendering the already done diagnosis of the problems that the Mexico City government is trying to solve in each ministry. Each ministry must have at least one indicator for monitoring gender programs. Even if we, at the first year, we did not know very accurately how to build these indicators, but everybody must have one. For example, the Ministry of Finance indicator was that he or they should monitor that every year must be more resources for women and gender equity than that previous year. So it was that's the indicator we had with them. And we had 1.2% of the total budget was directed toward women and gender equity. You must say it's not much, 1.2, but all people who is working on gender budgeting know that it is quite a lot. It is not very easy to get to 1%. And here we got more than 1%. I just want you to know that I don't think we have finalized or it's already over the experience, because since Nisreen already told you, this is a process. So, but it was a very strong start for the first year government, and then the second year we continued. You know, it was like a very, very well first year. And one thing that is very important in the budget, in the Mexico City budget, we had a program in 2008 called Gender Equality, one program, and the program has different categories of institutional activities created. Those were three at the beginning, you know. Activities to promote gender and equity, we had this place, a special place in the budget where we could put all the activities, every department, every single ministry who has activities to promote gender equality must put their money there. So it was easier for us to find where the money for women and gender equity is. The second was to design and coordinate gender-responsive public policy. You know, in here we used to put, for example, the people who was starting to disaggregate information or to ask for surveys in order to know what problems there were or something. And the third was public policy for gender equality. They were quite close to each other. But in 2009, the budget changed to be a performance-based budget, the Mexico City budget complete. So instead of having a program, we have a result. And the result, we moved from 12 to 13, was inequality gaps between women and men and reduced. We must, that's part of this performance budget that all governments are working for in Mexico at all levels, not just at federal or like this, that is one of the local levels, the biggest, obviously, but it's still a local level. And it's called inequality gaps between women and men are reduced. And then we had 8 sub-results. You know, those special items where we can put the programs and activities and strategies and the money, obviously, directed toward women and the gender perspective. The first one, but public policies have a gender perspective. The second, promotion of a culture of gender equality. The third, women have equal access to the labor market. And the fourth, women have timely, specialized health services. So even if not only the health services by themselves have services for women, but some others can have some kind of help for women's health, so they can put all together in here. The fifth was women have access to the benefits of economic development. And the sixth, women have access to social services to exercise their rights. The seventh, promotion of girls and women's educational development. And the eighth, violence against women is reduced and prevented, and its consequences are effectively addressed. So in this last one, every single ministry who has a program against violence against women, it must concentrate its policies and its programs and their money into this one. We have even more detailed segregation of the information, those who are preventing violence, those who are attending violence, and those who are, I don't remember what's the other one. Then each one of the 8 results have institutional activities, and those activities have women have access to the benefits of economic development, as I told you, has these activities, financial advice for women who save. You know, that program was at the Ministry of Finance. There was advice for women who wanted to save money. And the second, promotion of a small business women's development, the traditional one. The third program for rural, indigenous, transient, and migrant women. The fourth, credit counseling for women, you know, advice for women who wanted to ask for a credit. And the 71, because this was from before the development of small business women. So we have all these special places where we could address our gender issues. In the first year of the administration, there was a significant effort to formulate gender responsive budgets. And this is what I want to explain. Nisreen was talking about analyzing gender responsive budgets. We separate these kind of initiatives in these two huge areas. One is analyzing and the other is formulating. This is formulating gender responsive budgets. And the background, what have we done before to get those results? From 2000, as part of the strengthening of the follow-up strategies for Cairo Plus 5, we have starting with the gender responsive budgeting. So we have been working for 8 years previous. Civil society organization, primarily feminists, began to advocate for gender responsive budgeting since the year 2000. And in December 2006, a new administration in Mexico City began. And even in the transition period, we were asked to have a proposal for the government administration about gender equity. And the slogan is equity in the city. Even if it's not gender equity, well, it helps to be talking about equity. And in this transition period, we already proposed to do gender budgeting. And we consider the Mexico City budgets at all budgets as statements of values, where interests, priorities, and hierarchies work together. You know, that's the way we must consider the budget, and considering gender responsibilities as a tool for the incorporation of gender equity perspective in policy programs and budgets. The same as Nisreen told you, gender responsibility as a tool or as an instrument. And in this Mexican case, we are very much concentrated in this policy action. You know, how to engender policy. And if we engender policy, we are going to have engendered programs and engendered budgets. And that's our main aportation to the subject. And we have a methodology to formulate this gender bias. That methodology is not just for it is for government officials. It's a methodology for thinking about, for reflectioning about. We don't do the gender bias from outside. They do them themselves, you know, the officials. And well, we consider that gender responsive bias as a tool, and that's the way we work. And obviously, as all gender responsive budgeting, it started by questioning the assumed neutrality of policies, programs, and budgetary allocations. You know, that's a fundamental issue of the whole. Well, what be done? We had 9 years promoting gender responsive budgeting. Even if we're not exactly working in Mexico City, we work in the federal government and from NGOs advocating for gender responsive budgeting. We have worked with years with the federal legislature at the Mexican Congress. Every year that the budget appears from the last 9 years in Mexico, we make a chart where it says the resources for women are these, and those are decreasing or increasing, and they have moved, they have disappeared, these programs, and we advocate every year. And we used to do it from the NGOs, but now that's a tool for the parliamentarians, and the deputies are the ones who work with this gasto for gasto para mujeres y equidad de género. It's gender equities and women's expenditure, public expenditure. We have years of work with the women's machinery, because we do believe they are the ones who are in charge of this activity. We as NGOs just can promote or advise them or give them some our thoughts, but the responsibility for gender budgeting, we believe, must come from inside the government, from the ministry, women's ministry or women's machinery. We had developed this methodology of analysis and formulating gender responsive budgeting. And that was our tool that one put into the game. And we allied with the Mexico City Women's Institute, this women's mechanism, with the Ministry of Finance and Subsecretary for Expenditure, especially the one who is in charge of the budget, and my organization, that is Equidad de Género, Ciudadanía, Trabajo y Familia, Gender Equity, my NGO, where I work. And a lot of work during 2007, the Mexico City government and the Women's Institute had a network on gender agents in every institution from before. You know, there was a question in here that if we can come directly with gender-responsive budgeting. And I think it was much easier for this experience, at least, to be realized, because they had this gender agents in every single institution, public department in Mexico, and they had been gender trained before. A lot of training in gender in general, not for in gender and policy or in gender in budget. And yes. Gender focal points, yes. In ministries. In every ministry, there is a gender focal point. Yeah. And we train them, you know, because we had developed this methodology, we train them in gender responsive budgeting. And we train them in a long course, more than 70 hours the first year and 50 hours the second year, with homeworks and with a lot of work together. The Ministry of Finance created a position especially for that task. The aim was to provide support to all departments regarding their budget proposals. You know, they put a especially gender budget area or department inside the Ministry of Finance. And we reviewed the program proposals all together, the Ministry of Finance, the Women's Machinery, and myself. And they had an online course. I didn't participate in that part. The Ministry of Finance gave instructions for the budget formulation. That's very important because it was coming from the head, the one who has the money. For example, let's say a department that says, well, I don't know what to do about gender. And he said, well, I will not receive your budget if you don't put something. You must think on something, come for advice, try to do something. So we had a very, very good ally with this subsecretary of state of gender, from budgeting. And the instruction was given by this huge and the most powerful of all the ministries, as always, is the one who owns the money, who has the money, or distributes or administrates the money. So if they gave the instruction, there must be done. The Ministry of Finance and the Women's Institutes and Equidad de Género work together in the development of new manuals and formats. We work in order for them to have in the same, not a different one, but in the same manual that every year they have to how to prepare, how to formulate their budget in the same one. We included, you must have disaggregated data in here of the who are going to be the recipients. You must have the problem with something about gender. If there is a gender problem besides the problem that you are already attending, you must have as well an indicator about gender. You must have an activity about gender. So the formats are quite complete. Even if they, as Nisreen already said, even if they are not able to do it at the first time, they have to write them down, they have to think about it, they have to prepare objectives, especially for gender issues in every single department. The Ministry of Finance, we developed those formats and manuals, which included the information needed to incorporate gender perspective in policies, programs, and budget. The Ministry of Finance prepared the Mexico City expenditure budget proposal, and the first chapter explained the importance of formulating gender-responsive budget. The Mexico City Women's Institute and Equidad de Género also supported the preparation of the budget. Sometimes we were working together, the secretary, undersecretary of the state, subsecretary of expenditure come and says, give me an example of something that can be done with gender into an educational institution. And we said, well, we can have non-violence in the relationship, boyfriend and girlfriends. I don't know how to say it in English, For young people, non-violence in those relationships program, in order to for them to start talking about that, campaigning about that. So he said, well, I'll give you that amount of money if you implement some kind of this program. The achievements, the strengthening of public administration with the use of the methodological tool for formulating gender budgeting. We go with them and tell them, we are coming to strengthen your work because we are open your eyes about gender issues. So we are giving you an extra tool for working, and it's going to be very important in your work. Awareness raising and training about discrimination and gender inequality as well as public policy to eliminate them. And that's very important, a lot of government officials were discussing about the gender problems, the gender issues within their institutions. And earmarking of resources for women and gender equity, that was very important because normally there's some money for women or for gender equity, and that was the money that was first spent, even if it was not for women. And if we earmarked, it was not possible to spend, but only within the same issues. And improve possibilities for monitoring resources. Here it's not very clear, but those are the eight programs that I told you, and the percentage amount on 2009 budget. And as you can see, the highest is the third, that where women have access to the labor market in conditions of equity. This one, 25%, that is because daycare centers are there. So that's the hugest amount. And then the others are different. And then in here I have the differences in the budget, even in the first budget that I told you, it was 1.2% over the total expenditure of the government, of the city government. We came down to the next year, but the importance of this first year is that we earmark the money. So even if it was not much, because it was a lot, but since the amount increases the total budget, the amount, even if this increases as well, the total amount was not as clear. But we increased it again on 2009. And well, the challenge are sustainability, because now everybody talks about gender bias in Mexico, the Mexican city officials, and it's now we say that it's easier to formulate the budget or the policies, but it's not very easy to implement those programs. Now the advice is being asked on how to work on those programs. Well, the continued training for public officials, the strengthening of citizenship in order to generate the pressure for its continuation. You know? Let me just give you an example that I really like. In Mexico City, the transportation, they have many ministries about transport. You know, can you imagine to move 8 million people around the city, works and schools and university? So we have a huge metro. We have a lot of different kind of transports. You know, like trolleys, buses, and all that. So everyone must have something coming with gender. And the first who started was the metro. We had a lot of problems of violence inside, violence against women inside the metro, in the sense of unrespectful treatment for women. Even if we have two special trains, those are nine. Each train has nine wagons. Two were for women, but now three were for women. But we did a survey and found that women didn't know it was their own right to demand to be well treated. So the first thing we did, it was to have some booths where they can come and ask for help if they are not being respectful to them, and they can consignate the men who are treating badly women into the transportations. And that's in the metro, and we had four different booths in the most crowded metros, and we had as well some buses that are just for women. No men can ride in them. In the city, you know? Yeah. So it's a lot of money put into those buses. And, we have a lot of complaint because sometimes men are late for work and the buses do not stop because it's only for women. And it's very controversial, very, very controversial. But I think it's very important because it does question people, why do women need to be transported by themselves, no? And people is thinking about what is going on, why it is necessary for them to be by themselves. At least we hope so. People do question and reflect about that. And then when we get together, all the transport gender focus agents in their ministries, get together, they stimulate to each other, you know. What are you doing this time? What extra we can do? We can do a huge campaign all together, you know, all transport, all Mexican official transport, a campaign for no violence against women into transport or something like that. You know, that something like that is cooking. And for example, if we just, if those buses that are just one big one, it's not possible to separate women from men. But then they say, well, if we just open this door for women, you know, women can come closer to the chauffeur and it's easier. And so they are going to be together. And it has good results. Very simple things sometimes. In Mexico City Metro, that is very, very crowded at the rush hours, the policemen cannot take care only of women, obviously, must take care of everybody. But they have a step, only a step, so they are a little bit higher and they can see better how everything is going around there. Yeah. And so we had very nice programs, and we are working on a lot more every time. For example, for the women presas, you know, the ones who are in jail? Prisoners, women prisoners. We're working in a program for them to be trained for something when they get off jail, you know? Because women's conditions are much worse than men's conditions. Nobody goes to see them at jail. They are very, very stigmatized. They cannot get into work again after being in jail. So that kind of programs are we are working with, you know, with the different in the youth programs with this relationship campaigning against violence well, we do have very, very, a lot of differences in programs and a lot of different activities. Thank you very much.
I actually have a couple of worries about the bus solution. You know, as a woman coming from a developing country where the main transportation system is public transportation, and also having the privilege of living in both, you know, countries like Turkey and United States, I think segregation is really different than women's equality. I mean, segregation, separation doesn't really sound to me like a good solution because, I mean, in my experience, the more you press, the more it explodes. I mean, in Turkey, we had these things called purple pins. If someone got really close to you in the bus, you just pinch them. And, you know, and my experience is, I thought the men in America were different, but they're not. When they get the chance, they also harass you. But they harass you in points where they for sure know that you can't get a hold of a police. I mean, it happened. I was like, oh, this country is so nice, and, you know, men are so educated, and no one is harassing on the street. Once I took the bus, and I was taking the bus to a shopping mall, and I was in the intersection of a crossroads, and, you know, almost maybe like 50% of the passing cars would say something, because they're going so fast, and, you know, there's no police. It's kind of an isolated area. So why not increase the policing rather than segregation?
This must be something that goes all together. But we do think that it's a nice way for men to realize that we must go to that extreme, but as an affirmative action. You know, it's not forever. It's while they don't behave, let's say, that we must be in a. And women who use them really enjoy them. They can relax and sleep much easier in those buses by themselves. That's the way it's working in Mexico, and we already have 4 complaints at the Human Rights Institution of men because the bus did not stop for them. And we enjoy having those. Yes. And actually, it's like a pilot program, you know, a pilot program. During the is during the day as well, day and night, and then you cannot take it. You can go into the crowd and together with men if you prefer. So it's not that it's only that bus. It can be used if you want to, or if you don't want to, you cannot take it. Like in the metro, if we want to go into the crowd together with everybody, you can make it. We see it as an affirmative action, and we think it was necessary because people must think about it, must reflect about what is so wrong that women need a bus by themselves. You know, with that survey that we did, we really needed a special bus for women, at least, let's say, for I don't know how long. But it's. I know that not everybody agrees. I know that. But I enjoy. I enjoy being provocative.
Hi. I was wondering if you've done any impact assessment work on the projects that you have financed, and what kind of effort has been made in that regard. Thank you.
Our methodology starts always with the assessments, no? So we put together the problem, the program, and the money. You know, the pesos in Mexico, you know, PPP. Because it's very important to have to make the people realize that there is a problem. Actually, our methodology works within their own institutional data. We ask people from every institution, bring your own data. You know, we are going to work with your own problems, the ones you are already working on. You know, for example, the people who works at the register, where you register the newborns and marriages and all kind of that kind of register. They said, well, we are going to open just one window for women who are pregnant or have children or come with children. And they put in the paper, we are expecting 1,000 women within, let's say, a 3 months time. And after that, they came and say, well, we had more than 10,000 women, you know, in those conditions. So they are realizing why are they coming to ask for that service. You know, that's only to register babies or to give them the paper, the official papers, on that kind of papers. There's a lot of work done by women about that. You know, women go to register babies and to do this kind of stuff. And if they are with this kind of a special treatment, it's much better, you know. But it's the same problem. The problem that you are already dealing with the same, start by differentiating by sex, how many women come for each of the services you give, how many men, and for example, in the Human Rights Commission, we have that first assessment, and we saw that there are more women coming to us for to bring complaints, but those complaints are not because their own human rights were violated, but because of their husbands, brothers, and only men around. So at the time that we disaggregate bad sex, who are they working for? You know, it's 39% for women only. All of the other cases are men's cases in human rights. And they do come, and at the end, sometimes they say, well, no, it's better not. They go behind. No, instead of they don't follow the complaint that they are putting, they say, well, maybe it was not so bad or something. Those are just women, the ones who come back, you know, not keep on going with the effects that it could take, and with hypothesize that it's maybe because they are getting a lot of pressure from their families. How could you say so? Yeah, I already told. Yeah. Okay.
Thank you very much for that interesting presentation. And really, there is a lot to learn from the Mexican
thank you.
Case, because it appears to be really working, and I'm quite impressed. I have a few comments. One is in terms of monitoring, because the usual problem is that you may allocate resources for gender issues, but when it comes to implementation, it evaporates. Then the second thing is on the issue of the process of formulation of the budget. I would like to know at what point, for instance, civil society, women organizations are involved to ensure that gender issues are specified and allocated resources, or is it that there is a particular machinery, maybe gender machinery, which informs the ministries the particular issues that have to be involved, you know, or who specifies those issues. Now, on the issue of you gave us one of your slides. The allocation to gender is 1.2%. Well, that's quite interesting, because I see a situation where that could literally mean that that is the allocation to gender-specific issues. But within the budget, the general budget support, gender affairs or issues automatically are allocated resources. I'm looking at health, for example. If you've got a health budget, and within the health budget, you know, reproductive health, that is targeting gender in terms of maternal health. So the 1.2, did you arrive it? At it after, you know, breaking down all those little budgets in various sectors, you know, including education and health and, you know, other economic structures, or that was the gender-specific budget? Because I think there are two budgets, the gender-specific ones, and then the general budget support, where you can also have. Then on the issue of conditionality, I liked it, because we also have it, and that is in terms of the district or local government budgets. Unfortunately, we don't have that conditionality at the central level, the sector level, but within the district budgets, there is the conditionality that I think at least something like maybe 30% has to go to the to gender issues. But the problem really comes to the identification of those issues. The process of identification is still really wanting, and then it's not very clear. I haven't really read many reports. I'm not very clear whether that allocation goes right up to implementation. Then in terms of the focal points, as I said, we have focal points. But unfortunately, our focal points, they are at the, you know, they are junior officials. They cannot influence really much in terms of allocating budgets. And then on the issue of identification of gaps for allocation of budgets, I didn't I didn't hear you talk about situation analysis, you know, how the issues are identified, you know, situation analysis and identifying issues, priorities, you know, all the way down to activities, and I didn't hear you talk about monitoring indicators. I saw your results, sub-results and whatever, but you didn't mention anything about gender-sensitive indicators to ensure that you're actually doing the monitoring. Thank you.
Thank you.
Before passing on the microphone to Gisela and Mira, may I suggest that we keep our points maybe maximum to two or three, and then if we have time, we'll come back?
Cool. Yeah, I have one. Thanks. Yeah, thank you very much, Lucia. It was very interesting presentation, and I have to say that I've been in Mexico and I really completely agree with you and with this fight. I wish we could have this in Guatemala, and especially in these countries when you don't trust and don't believe, and they are part of all of this corruption thing, like policemen, so you cannot trust them. So I think it's a really good way to attack. And my question is, for example, in the case of Guatemala, the problem that we really have is the government instability. So how you can tie this all this gender-responsive budgeting structure to a country where you don't have where the every 4 years everything changes, even the people, even everything. So it's nothing tied there, and so it's very difficult for us to work there in this kind of structures, because all the ministries and even in the mechanism of women are changed. Everybody for like that in one day, so everything has to start. And so this was a little bit my question.
Well, thank you for your presentation. I liked it. And actually, I have one comment as a question, which is, isn't it much better to educate women and empower women about their rights and how to deal with such situations than just giving them? Because when you give someone, when you say, okay, this train is only for women, it is just that you separate them and that you make them really weak by doing this, because instead of just letting, because this is something in the society, it's happening everywhere. It's not only in Mexico or in Palestine, it's just everywhere. So it is much better that we empower women and educate them that, okay, if this
happens. But it takes a long time to empower them.
I know, because.
In the meanwhile, we must treat them well.
Yeah, because I remember when I was working in Brussels, there was a special parking places for women to park their cars, which I never understood, because I never understood why women in Brussels, in Belgium, will ask for a special places for them to park their cars. And another comment, that in Palestine, because as well we have this harassment of women in the streets as well, is that now there is policemen everywhere in the streets and in the special places that is known for guys to, you know, to stay and just start harassing women. And now it is like getting less and less, because no one is allowed to stand on the street and start harassing this or just throwing any words. So I don't know, I think that's it, what I have to say. Okay.
Take that question. Yes. Okay.
Thank you very much for giving me opportunity. I would just give you a very little comment regarding the separation. You see, gender discrimination and giving women equal opportunity, sometimes it means to give women advantages. So I totally agree from the very beginning your strategy to give women advantages and then work further to eliminate this discrimination and give women capabilities to defend their rights further. Thank you.
Just to share a little bit some experience again, and to bring the issues of linking gender-responsive budget to this access to access to decision making for women. Because at AOMI, what we did is in the local level also work with women's organization and to empower them and to promote their participation in decision making through two programs. The WEFU, which is a Women Empowerment Fund, we see now that most of the women that we're working with are member of committee, health committee, water committee in the local level, and we were also responsible of the gender aspect in the Millennium Village. And in this area also, women are now accessing to decision making, and that make get some result, like the access to land. You know that in this region now, the women have access to land, and AOMI is supporting them to do something with this. Just wanted to share with you this experience and ask you whether you have done some work in this area, and how did you get women involved in the political level?
Well, thank you very much for your comments and questions. I know I always that I raise my example, it makes a lot of agreement and disagreement. But that's something that we must discuss, you know. We, as feminists, we do not agree all with the same strategies. And it's very important to discuss those points and to see why some of us want this kind of affirmative actions and others prefer something different. You know, it's just something that we must, those are strategies. And, the first question that that it's go together for the two of you, in this process, NGOs were not involved, but only mine as advisors, you know. It was not women from the NGOs participating in the formulating of gender rights. Not in this experience, you know. Because it's a different way to achieve our goals. Because we had a lot of government officials already trained and kind of sensible and trying, eager to do things. So it was a good soil. And then we have if the officials' gender focal points were very junior. We ask for people from the planning commissions to be the focal points. You know, there must come with people who already take decisions, because if not, it's not possible to do anything. And there is not all people in a high-level position, but quite a lot of them who come to be trained are in that position. The identification of gaps, that's a very, very important issue that we must deal every single time. Where is the gap that we want to close? How can we eradicate that discrimination or that inequality that we are looking at? You know, and we start our training by training people to ask to their own data where are those differences in the, where are those gaps, you know. If, for example, in the health service, they came and said, we have spent more money on women's operations, you know, at the health service. And we just asked them, please take away all the birth, you know, cesáreas, operation, how do they call it in English? Cesáreas. And then, well, that was something different. Well, that's because that's our biology. That's sex, that's not gender. So with maths, if you take away those data, then we have the more close the same figures, you know? But if it's something that it makes you a lot of noise, and you just say, well, we spend a lot of money in women, yeah. And then, well, I think I leave it in there. Thank you very much, and I hope next time that we join, you all can share us experiences with gender-responsive budgeting. Thank you very much.